We are just coming off two back-to-back high-profile suicides in 1 week, that of celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain and fashion designer Kate Spade. Both hung themselves, leaving their families and fans in disbelief. The cases come as the Center for Disease Control released a report on the spike in suicide cases across the country. Joining us to talk about Hawaii's numbers, Dr. Janelle Sugimoto Matsuda. She's with the University of Hawaii's Department of Psychiatry and the head of the Suicide Prevention Task Force.
We have seen some increasing trends both in Hawaii as well as other states and nationally. So the CDC did release their report last week, and it just so happened to come out during the news of the two high-profile suicides that we are seeing upward trends nationally as well.
Mm-hmm. And so explain why all of Hawaii's numbers weren't included in that CDC report.
Mm-hmm. So for some of the details of where they get that data, the CDC runs a program called the National Violent Death Reporting System. And currently, all 50 states are included. Hawaii became a participant about a year or two ago. So while the report was just released, the analysis, the really details of kind of the contextual information around suicides pulled from older data that they had when Hawaii was not yet participating. That's not to say Hawaii doesn't have data. We have some tracking data within our state for suicide deaths, attempts, hospitalizations, things like that. But now we will be putting that data into the national system to be able to compare a little bit more accurately across states and be part of that national system.
So share with our listeners, what is the snapshot here in Hawaii?
Mm-hmm. Basically, if you break it down to the most simplest way to say it, it's one every 2 days. One every 2 days for suicides across all ages. And that's not to say we have the highest rate in the nation. We don't. But of course, any suicide is a terrible tragedy that we want to try to prevent. But that's what we're looking at. And I think that surprises a lot of people because we don't talk about it. We don't publicize when suicides occur for different reasons. But generally, it's not a topic that, you know, is dinner table conversation where we're saying, hey, you know, what about this issue? What about mental health? What about suicide prevention? So it is surprising to many people, even professionals in the community.
Well, as a general rule, I know most media, you know, they don't really report these cases unless there's some unusual circumstance, just because they don't want copycats. And I even know with the police, you know, it's more the cases of dead on arrival, and they don't really publicize a lot of that.
Right. We thank the media for using what we call safe messaging. And safe messaging essentially means it's not that you can't talk about suicide. We actually want to talk about it because how are we going to prevent it if we can't even talk about it? But we do want to encourage media, journalists, and just anybody who is putting things on websites or social media to look at safe messaging guidelines. They're readily available online. And basically, the general things that you want to provide are hope, help, resources, and warning signs. You know, give that basic information whenever you are publishing anything about suicide. And we want to ask people to avoid, you know, overly graphic, overly detailed information because really the public doesn't need to know that information. We want to avoid glamorizing it, that everybody's doing it kind of messages. And we also want to ask people, you know, don't simplify causes to say, well, this one incident occurred and then the person made their suicide attempt. It's never that simple.
It's complicated.
It's very complicated.
So and often we don't know the reasons.
Exactly, which is one of the unfortunate, you know, frustrations around this issue.
So what are we doing as a state to deal with this problem?
Mm-hmm. So I'm currently chairing the Prevent Suicide Hawaii Task Force. We are a community-based network of providers, of organizations, and just of individual community members across the state. We have partners on all the different islands. And just we're kind of the hub or the network for folks to come together and coordinate efforts around suicide prevention and mental health and mental wellness. And we do partner very closely with the Department of Health. They're sort of our designated state lead for suicide prevention. And they guide us through planning of activities and awareness campaigns. We're right now planning for a big statewide conference in April 2019, so that's coming up, to just, you know, continue to spread awareness, get people talking about it, you know, and sharing information, because I know we're not always good at that, but to get providers and community to come together. We also recently were asked to and presented a strategic plan to the state legislature to try to reduce suicides 25% by the year 2025. And there's a national campaign encouraging all states to reduce 20% by 2025. But our hope, our ideal is slightly higher than the national. So the task force put together some recommendations that we presented to the legislature to get some, you know, higher level support and organization and coordination around this effort.
And so I know just myself, I know of families who've suffered the loss of their children, you know, because of suicide. And that's pretty traumatic, because you always think you're going to outlive your children. And yet I know many people, many families are struggling with this. What's the snapshot for suicide in young people?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that while the suicide death rate for youth is, when we look by ages, is not the highest, the suicide attempt rate and the risk for attempts as well as thinking about suicide is quite high in young people. And young people, meaning from 10 all the way up to even early 20s, is kind of a high risk time frame for folks. And, you know, not just young people and just developmentally and all those things, but of course when you think about transitioning from high school to life or adulthood or workforce or college or whatever it may be, that transition time period can also be a high risk period.
So is there anything that we need to know as parents to help our children with the coping skills?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely you hit it on the head right there with coping skills. And, you know, even as adults we have coping skills, some of which are positive and some of which are not so positive, but just really encouraging that dialogue, being open with your children, not shutting off conversations around mental health or just talking about feelings and those kinds of things. And it's so taboo already in our society. So as parents, how can we just say to our children, you know, I'm here, you can talk to me, I'm not going to be judgmental about if you talk about this is how I'm feeling or this is what happened or whatever, that I'm somebody that you can talk to. And really encouraging not just parents, right, but adults in general to be open if you work in a school or you work with youth, to be willing and open to just talk story and have that kind of conversation.
I know sometimes folks say that there are helicopter parents who swoop in and rescue their children, but then those children don't learn to be resilient and don't know how to cope. And so when something major happens, they fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a careful balance, right? Supporting them, being open to having that conversation. But not just children, adults in general, right? We need to talk more about the resilience factor. And more of the suicide prevention and mental health field is moving away from the risk, but more into how can we bolster people's coping skills? How can we get them to be more resilient in light of, we know that life stressors will happen, but how can we build up that positive side, the resilience, to have people get better coping skills and also still keeping the conversation open?
And then what about for adults then, let's say for seniors?
Mm-hmm.
There's a large number that deal with depression.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do if we see our kupuna, our aunties and our uncles or our parents, mm-hmm. Suffering and dealing with depression?
Yeah, I think, I hate to keep coming back to it, but it really is still opening the conversation and not saying, well, the kind of they've lived a good life kind of thing, and so we shouldn't look for depression in our seniors or our elders, but definitely they're a high-risk group as well. When you think about transition periods being a time to check in on somebody, you know, retirement from workforce into whatever is planned thereafter, really looking at those transitions to say, do they have plans? How can we make sure that they've still got support networks despite leaving an organization that they've worked for 30 years? And also still, like I said earlier, being open to, hey, yeah, seniors may do suffer from depression, and it's not just something we should ignore because, you know, they're older or farther along in life, but it's something that we definitely need to still keep an eye on.
And then a lot of our communities are dealing with disasters, the trauma of the recent flooding, the trauma of the volcano. A lot of folks are displaced, they're homeless. So we just kind of need to pay attention to their mental health issues.
Most definitely. Many of our partners have been on the ground on the different islands responding to shelters, responding, being with families just during this time. And just as we were discussing earlier, making sure that our responders also have some kind of support network. They have time away so that they can kind of recoup, do some self-care, and come back and still be able to support these families. But unfortunately, you know, with the limited number of mental health providers, social support providers, we are seeing, we're trying to be careful about burnout and compassion fatigue and those kinds of things.
Right, because caregivers need care too.
Absolutely, in order to do the best out there that they can in the field.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
No, thank you very much.
Dr. Janelle Sugimoto-Matsuda is assistant professor at the University of Hawaii Medical School. She shares that there is a free conference open to the public underway in Waikiki. That's today and tomorrow for those interested in training. You can find links to that and other local resources on our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.